Okay, so this week we are coming towards Hanukkah, and the Maimah, the discourse we're going to be exploring, Be'ezrat Hashem, was said in 1977, and it was published Muga, edited by the Rebbe, and it focuses, I mean, the window, as it were, for the Maimah. Each discourse has some kind of window, which is either a scriptural verse or something from the Talmud or something like that, that it makes access to this sort of spiritual domain. And so here it's a passage from the Talmud, and that's what we have in front of us. You have on the front page is the Hebrew, and on the reverse of that front page is the translation of the Talmud. If we just look at the now, it says we're going to be taking little bits and pieces. If we take 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 lines down
on the central thing.
Yeah, on the central thing, which is the actual Talmud. Mitzvata mishetishka chama. The mitzvah, it's talking about the Hanukkah lamp. The tractate Shabbat, the second chapter, is Bameh Madlikin, which talks about lighting Shabbat candles. So in that chapter is inserted the things to do with Hanukkah and the Hanukkah lamp. suitably, if you like. So it says there, mitzvah ta mishetishka chama, the mitzvah of lighting the Hanukkah lamp is from the time that the sun sets, ad shetachale regel min ashuk, until there are no more feet in the market. The feet in the market have disappeared. Which literally means that we're able, from sunset onwards, to light the, or even before sunset, for example, on Friday, we light the Hanukkah lamp before sunset, as long as it burns half an hour after night. So you can light a Hanukkah lamp with longer candles, and you can light it before sunset, but that it should last until nightfall, and half an hour into nightfall, hopefully. So that's when we start lighting it. Now, how late can one go? So it says, Ad shetachale regel min ashuk, till there are no more feet in the market. In other words, till the whole town is quietened down. That means for a town like London, you can light the Hanukkah menorah quite late, because things go on very late.
Whereas obviously it's talking about Gidin. It's not saying this is in all in Eretz Yisrael. No, this is in, we're talking about what went on in Eretz Yisrael.
Actually, the people that they're talking about in the market are not Jews, because
right.
It mentions the Talmudians, which is a kind of a gypsy people, not a Jewish people. But if they are around still in the streets, and they would go around selling tinder and stuff like that, if they're still around, then you can still light the Hanukkah lamp. So the way I understand this, if we live in a little English village, you know, which at 8 o'clock in the evening everyone's fast asleep, well, that's what they used to be till television was invented. But they do have to get up early to milk the cow, you know, so they do go to sleep quite early. then you'd have to light the Hanukkah lamp earlier, whereas here, you know, you can 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, parts of London are, you know, I'm not recommending lighting the menorah so late, but, you know, but midnight.
There is places out there where everything does shut down at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
For example, like Plymouth.
Yeah, that's right.
Everyone's to get nice, the village.
Nice, quiet town. Yeah, I mean, Plymouth's not a village, but it's still a quiet market town. So then, if we go a little bit further, Just a couple of lines further, it's the line beginning Ad. It's like commenting on this. Ad shetachale rega min ashuk, till there are no more feet in the marketplace. You see that? Va'ad kama, and how much is this? Omer Rabba ba Bachana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabba ba the son of Bachama says, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Ad dechalyam rigla de Talmudoi, till the feet of the Talmudoi have gone away. And the Talmudoi, that is, if you look in Rashi, which is like seven lines down on the left-hand side, in the middle of the line, Rigla de Talmudoi, if you can read the Rashi, the feet of the Talmudoyim, Shem Uma, it's the name of a nation, Melakte Eitzim Dakim, who would collect little pieces of wood, Umit Akfim Bashuk, and they stay late in the market, Ad Shaholchim Bnei Ashuk Lebateim, till everyone from the market has gone home, Mishach HaShecha, after dark, Umavirim Bebateim, and they light in their fires, or they light fires in their, or lamps in their houses. Ukashatzlichim le'etzim, and when they need wood, yoitzim, the person comes out of his house, and he finds one of these Talmudoyim people, v'koinin mehem, and they buy the wood from them. So in other words, they hang around later than everyone else. Everyone else goes home to cook supper. And they hang around in the streets with their bundles of wood. Thanks. So they hang around late in order to supply the needs of the people who've actually gone home. You see, most market people, when everyone goes home, they also pack up. If you're selling oranges in the market and everyone's gone home, so there's no point standing there with your barrow of oranges. But if what you're selling is something that people need at home in the evening, and everyone's gone home from the market, but they might be making supper, and then they realize they haven't got enough wood, so they come out and they see if they can find one of these Talmudians, and they buy some wood from him. So therefore the Talmudians stay very late in the marketplace, and so those are the that's the sort of the latest people in the market. I don't know who the equivalent would be.
They work at night, night shifts, no?
Well, they work at night, yeah. How long they go on, is if it's a shift.
I'm not going to buy wood at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well,
I wouldn't run out of the house.
Yeah, but they're preparing it. I've
seen it, exactly.
But meat, you've seen it meat markets and things, yeah, stop working it.
I saw a guy selling tools out of the back of his car at 3 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
How interesting. Gosh, what, like a car boot kind of?
Or like around the back of the where I lived at the time.
People want to sleep four at three.
He's just selling him tools out of the back of his car.
How interesting. All night.
For example,
do you think fruit, it was veg, night workers?
Fruit, veg, fish, and all that business.
Yeah, that goes on all night in some streets.
Bird is bird, you know, catches the worm, you know.
Well, it's not just that. I don't know why, but there's a whole, you know, all the Turkish shops are open all night.
These people work there.
Well, it's, you know. A considerable part of London is awake all night. What?
People did not have any chimneys in those days.
Chimneys?
Yeah.
Well, they had fires. I mean, they needed to have fires in order to keep to cook food, quite apart from keeping warm. So, how they organized?
Probably more fun to gather it together and get it together, and then just like putting a button in the wall and press the button, and off you go.
Well, you can always. Anyway, so that is the opening point of this discourse, which we're going to try to explore, which was actually said on the last day of Hanukkah in 1977. And there had earlier, that Hanukkah, another discourse had been said also about Hanukkah. So this is like a continuation of that second one, but it stands by itself. So there's the mimer melody in order to help us get into the mood of the mimer. Yom ba ya yam ba yam ba bom ha yam ba da yo yam bo yom ba 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 yam ba yo yam ha yam ba ya yam ba yo is from the time that the sun sets until the feet have gone away from the market, etc., which means until the feet of the Talmudians have gone away. So that in the Talmud is simply like fixing a time, you know, instead of saying 11:30 at night, it gives this time. It measures it by the Talmudians who were there in those days. And it's explained in the teachings of the previous Lubavitch Rebbeim. Hachiluk shebein Nerot Chanukah leNerot Hamikdash veNerot Shabbat. The difference between the lights of Chanukah on the one hand and the lights in the temple and Ner Shabbat on the other. The Nerot HaMikdash v'Nerot Shabbat, because the lights in the temple, see, there was a menorah in the temple, the golden menorah. There were the lights in the temple, v'Nerot Shabbat, and the lights of Shabbat. Zman hadlakatam hu mibod yom. The time that we light them is while it's still day. The Nerot HaMikdash idliku miplag HaMincha. The lights in the temple were lit at what's called Plag HaMincha. Now, Plag HaMincha is an hour and a quarter before sunset. So it's quite a time before sunset. V'gam Nerot Shabbat tzarich ladikan kodem shkiat hachama. And also, the Shabbat candles, we have to light before the sun sets, mitzad shmirat Shabbat. Otherwise, we wouldn't be keeping Shabbat properly. So, both the lights in the temple and the lights of Shabbat, we light before sunset. Sorry. Masha'en kein ne Chanukah. Where is Chanukah? The lamp of Chanukah is different. Mitzvotahi mishetishka achama. Its mitzvah is from when? After sunset. And it's supposed to burn into the darkness. So the whole idea of the Chanukah lamp is, in a way, the opposite. That it burns into the darkness. The hagam shezeh, the zeh shetiknu ner Chanukah, hu mipnei hanes shehaya b'neirot hamikdash. Even though the rabbinic enactment, why they decided that we should light a Chanukah lamp, is because of the miracle that took place with the lights in the temple. In which case it would have been fitting that the lighting of the Chanukah lamp should be exactly the same time as the lighting of the temple menorah. Ubeflat, behold the tikkun rabbanan kein doraita tikkun, especially that there's a principle that whenever the sages enact something, they imitate whatever there is from the Torah, and since from the Torah you have the menorah, and the menorah is lit well before sunset, you would have thought that the menorah in the temple, so you would have thought that the Chanukah menorah would also be lit well before sunset. Before sunset. Umikol makom, and nonetheless, mitzvotai dafka mishetishka achama. The idea of lighting the Chanukah lamp is specifically when the sun is set.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yeah.
I'm saying, what is the difference between lighting the Chanukah candle, lighting the Shabbos candle, and lighting the candle in the base of Mikdash? I'm saying, which one are we following?
Well, you see, each one has its own spiritual effect. And in this particular maimer, we're exploring the spiritual effect of the Chanukah lamp. So what he's focusing on here is that the very fact that we light it after sunset, or that's when the mitzvah is, this is telling us something about what is really the effect of this Chanukah lamp. The point is to illuminate the darkness.
Yes. Saying, because by the Beis HaMikdash and by Shabbos, we start by day.
Yeah. You see, you could see that in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, and the Shabbat candles, they are bringing a wholesome radiance into, you know, it's not so much a question of darkness, it's a question of light. You know, it's like you're focusing on the light. There's the light in the temple, which is a spiritual light. And the menorah, which is lit in the temple, can be seen as representing the spiritual illumination which was in the temple all the time. So expressing that spiritual illumination, there is the menorah, and so we're simply doing something which represents that spiritual illumination. Chanukah is something else. What he's focusing on here is that Chanukah is about a time of darkness. And it's something, or rather, that we're trying to do in relation to darkness. And so this is some kind of... Hi, David. Some kind of struggle. Right, here, let me give you... Hi, Akiva, how are you? It's some kind of struggle with darkness, or a transformation of darkness. And that's really the focus of Chanukah, especially in this discourse. And darkness has many madrigot. There's inner darkness, darkness within the life of an individual. And there's also darkness as regards the world, in the sense of negativity, evil, the klipot, which conceal holiness and express darkness. And there's darkness in terms of epochs, such as the darkness of exile. So that's what we're beginning to focus on. So we're up to the word v'yadua, which is just about halfway down this paragraph, the beginning of the line. V'yadua habiyo b'zeh. And it's known, the explanation of this. She'inyan mishetishka achama. The idea of the sun setting, kai refers al zman hagalut. Kai is an Aramaic word, and it means stands, it represents. Kai al-zman galut, it concerns the time of exile, shenikra b'shem choshech, which is called darkness. Now the exile, we can understand, exile represents, it's called darkness, it's a spiritual darkness. What is the cause of exile? V'hasiba l'choshech ha-galut, the cause of the darkness of exile, hi ha-choshech ha-ruchani, is spiritual darkness. It's by peoples. The spiritual darkness of the Jewish people generates the darkness of the exile. So spiritual darkness, there are many forms it can take, but the simple term, perhaps simplistic term, which is used to describe it, is inyan ha-chataim, sins. You know the word chata, which we translate sin, literally means to miss. There's a verse in the book of Samuel about the followers of King David. Kolea el ha-sa'ara, they were very good marksmen with a bow and arrow. They could shoot an arrow on a hare, and they wouldn't miss. So the word chet, which is usually translated sin, is actually missing something, missing some spiritual possibility that could have been there. And if you go far enough, missing this and missing that, it can be something really negative, because shehem hepech ne mitzvah, they're the opposite of the mitzvah is a candle, the Torah, and Torah is light. So the doing of a mitzvah, which is not missing, which is doing, you know, there's an opportunity to do something positive. And one takes that opportunity. There's an opportunity, there's learning Torah, and one takes that opportunity. That's a radiance of light. And missing that radiance of light is the opposite. So if we have the darkness of chataim, of missing, quote unquote, sinning, כמו שאומרים, as we say, ומפני חטאינו גלינו מארצנו. Because of our sins, we went into exile from our beautiful land. And that's why we are not in the land of Israel, and that is why there is exile. And even in Israel, there's also exile. Because in the land of Israel, there isn't the spiritual freedom that there should be. The temple is in ruins, and the one, in fact, is more aware when one is in Israel of the tension between a state of galut and a state of geula and a state of redemption. However, at the same time, the land of Israel is the land of Israel, you know, so it's there rather than being the countries of exile that we're in now, at this moment. However, even if we were in Israel, which of course is a very exalted thing, nonetheless, it's a historical period which is still exile. So there's geographic exile and there's historical, there's the temporal exile.
And spiritual.
And spiritual.
That's what
you're saying. Yeah, spiritual exile. I mean, spiritual exile is the real essence of what the exile is about. Yeah. And the spiritual exile comes from the lack of illumination, or the opposite, a darkness, which comes from missing what could have been achieved.
And yet, isn't it said that when you're in Israel, the soul is at a more elevated stage than...
Absolutely. When Rabbi Nachman of Breslov came to Israel, he went on a long journey to Israel. I can't remember the exact date. Around 1800. He went on a long journey to Israel. Of course, you know, to get there from Eastern Europe in those days was not easy. And he had with him a man who had come with him to like accompany a chosid, who had come with him to accompany him on this journey. And as soon as he got there, he walked four paces. He says, fine, I've now achieved what had to be achieved by coming to Israel, by walking four steps in the land of Israel. Let's go. And the man who'd come with him was a bit up, like they'd spent months, you know, with difficulty, different thing, you know. Can we please stay a bit longer? So he did stay. He consented to stay a bit longer. But for him, it was like a spiritual achievement. And once he got there, there was that spiritual achievement. As it says in the Talmud, Avira de Eretz Yisrael machkim. The air of the land of Israel makes you wise. So the concept. So v'zehu ma'shenei Chanukah mitzvatah mishetishkah chama. That's why the Chanukah lamp, its mitzvah is when the sun is set. Ki inyan ne'chanukah, the concept of the Chanukah lamp, the Chanukah light, is to illuminate the darkness of exile. So that's what the Chanukah lamp is doing. The Chanukah lamp is illuminating the darkness of exile, and there are many aspects about the Chanukah lamp which underline that fact. So for example, one aspect is the time that we light the Chanukah lamp. The other is where we light the Chanukah lamp. Now the Talmud speaks about putting the Chanukah lamp at the entrance of one's house, on the outside. And there should be the mezuzah on one side of the door, and then the Chanukah lamp on the other. And so the Chanukah lamp is somehow there, reaching into the darkness, outside the home. That's the concept of the Chanukah lamp, as described in the Talmud. Now then, in the Code of Law, it says, now we live among Gentiles, and there could be all kinds of problems, and So therefore, we generally, in England, we light the Hanukkah lamp inside the house. But nonetheless, some people have the custom to put the Hanukkah lamp in the window so that it's shining outside. Or even inside, but they put it in the doorway. The concept of having it in the doorway, the idea of having the Hanukkah lamp in the doorway. In Israel, many people do put it in the doorway. So I've seen in Jerusalem, it looks very beautiful, people have a kind of a glass cover, like a glass, you know, like a tall glass bowl, which, like what you put electric clocks in. So they have that round the Hanukkah lamp, which is at the entrance of the, like, the courtyard in Jerusalem, something like
that. Presumably a little hole at the top.
Yeah, for I imagine so. Yeah. So that's another aspect of the Hanukkah lamp, which relates it to the outside and to the illumination of the darkness of the outside. You see, inside and outside are very intriguing concepts. And there's, in the laws of Shabbat and in Erevin, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what constitutes inside and outside, different domains. So outside is the Roshut HaRabin, the public domain. The public domain has some kind of threatening, dangerous aspect to it, whereas the Roshut HaYachid, the domain of the One, like the oneness of God, that's like one's home, and that's somehow secure and spiritual and holy, whereas the Roshut HaRabin, the domain of the many, the public domain, which is a kind of ambiguous place, that's with possible threats and danger, that's the place of darkness. And what is happening with the Hanukkah lamp is putting the Hanukkah lamp at the entrance to the house in some way equivalent to the mezuzah, but on the other side to the mezuzah, like the mezuzah is on one side, like going into the house, the mezuzah will be on the right, and the Hanukkah lamp on the left. And so the Hanukkah lamp from the point at the left is shining outside, whereas the mezuzah is pointing inside. So the mezuzah is sort of spreading a radiance inside the house, and the Hanukkah lamp is extending a radiance outside the house. Now, because the concept.
Where are we?
We just read the words. Mipnei chatoi nigalinu.
What line?
So that's 3-6 lines up from the bottom, in the middle of the line. וזהו מה שנה חנוכה מצוותה משתשכח חמה. Well, we've said this already, but still. That's why the נה חנוכה, the חנוכה lamp, its mitzvah is when the sun sets. כי עניין נה חנוכה להיית או חושך הגלות, because the idea of the חנוכה lamp is to illuminate the darkness of exile. Shahari has manda nes Chanukah, because the time of the miracle of Chanukah, Av Sha'az Hayah Beit HaMikdash Kayim, even though at that time the temple was standing, still, Nikha Gam came b'shem Galut. It's still called the time of exile. In fact, it's called Galut Yavan, the exile of Greece. There's the exile of Greece, the exile of Persia, the exile of Greece, the Persians, the Medes, the Greeks, and the Romans. Those are the four exiles. And or Babylonian, Persia, Greeks, Romans. You know how exactly you work it out. These what are the different epochs? But this, the time of the Hanukkah miracle, the battle with the Greeks, that was a time of exile. And especially in those days, lifnei hanes, before the time of the miracle of Hanukkah, shaya itgabrut hachoshach, the darkness was tremendously strong. וכמובן מנוסח ועל הניסים גודל הצרות. And the text of Al HaNisim, which is added in to the grace after meals and added into the Amidah that we say, and it describes the miracle of Hanukkah, it also tells us about the great suffering that there was at that time at the hand of the Syrian Greeks. וזה גם כן משהו זמנה של נחנוכה עד שתריכה לרגל מן השוק. This is why the time of the Hanukkah lamp is until the feet disappear from the market, עד דתחל יוריד לתעמודוי, until the feet of the Talmudians have gone. Now the word Talmudoi is an interesting word. I think it's the only place where it occurs in the Talmud. The whole Talmud, I think, this is the only place where the word Talmudoi appears. And so Rashi has a tradition which he's shared with us, that it's a nation who sold bits of wood, like the whole story, that little narrative he gave to us about how the Talmudians fit into the story. That's like a tradition that Rashi had, as far as I know. I don't know that it's written anywhere else. Could be the Aruch. There are places it might have been. But there are other meanings to the word Talmudoi. Talmudoi heima mordim b'malchut shamayim. The word Talmudoi is hinting at something. Those who rebel against the kingship of heaven. Look, Talmud. Look at the letters of the word Talmud. Otiyot moredet. It's the same letters as the word moredet. And moredet is a word in the feminine meaning rebelling. To rebel is moredet. So Talmud is the concept of rebellion. Talmud therefore represents some kind of negativity, spiritual negativity. And what we say is that we light the Hanukkah lamp. How long do we let it? How long do we have we got that we can light it? Till the feet of the Talmudians have disappeared. Till the feet of rebellion has disappeared.
Now, in other words, as long as there's darkness.
Yes, because once the feet of the rebels have disappeared, then there's light. Yes, it's a very good way of putting it. It's a beautiful way of putting it. Now, as we read in the Rashi, the Talmudians stay a long time in the market. Now we go over the page. To page Kuf Ein, and the market represents Pchinas Roshut HaRabim. That's the public thoroughfare with all the negative aspect that that represents. Turei Dipchuda. That's a beautiful or moving phrase from the Zohar. Mountains of separation. That's the realm of the public thoroughfare. Mountains of separation, which express negativity, concealment of the divine. Va'ad v'chal yarig l'detam v'doi b'shnei ha'perushim, and until the feet of the Talmudians have disappeared, according to the two ways of understanding it, which means shaha'or d'nei Chanukah, the light of the Chanukah lamp, mechale u'mevatel et rig l'detam v'doi, it gets rid of, it cancels the feet of the Talmudians, of the rebels. And that's one way of understanding it, that it gets rid of them. So you have these negative forces. The Talmudians, for whatever reason, represent negative forces, negative spiritual forces. I mean, like looking at it graphically, you know, these people who are waiting around the houses. You know, these dust, you know, as it's getting later and later, and there are these people waiting there, you know, with their sacks of wood. There's a certain powerful image over there, these lonely people. And so one way of understanding what the light of the Hanukkah lamp does is that it's they disappear, these negative forces, you know, in terms of the wood sellers in the market, you would say they've gone home finally.
You make more money like that. Because when you open up your house to chase around to see who's got fire, you left it cold in your house.
Yeah, that's true. So they've gone away. They've finally gone away. The light of the Hanukkah lamp has driven them away. But there is another way of understanding it. The light of the Hanukkah lamp causes kilayon. Now, kilayon means, literally it means, how would you translate it? Put?
Kilayon. Ending.
Ending.
Which word?
Kilayon. Kilayon.
An English word, an English translation for that.
Yeah. Kilayon. Kilayon, it's on the second line on page Kufayim, near the end of the line. So,
extinction.
Yeah.
Extinction.
Well, now you see there's extinction in a negative way, and there's extinction in a positive way.
Extinguishing. People say like extinguish the fire.
Yes, extinguish the fire. Or there's a person who is filled with such love for the divine that it's as if they expire in that love. I mean, they don't actually die, but it's in Yiddish you say oiskein and getrich, you know, like just the
energetic.
Well, it's more than that. It's like it's such an intense experience that like they disappear into godliness. It's a kind of extinction.
It's like an absorption.
It is a kind of absorption. Yeah, yeah. The person's absorbed by the divine. It's such an intense meeting point with the divine, with the infinite, the divine, that it's like an absorption. Kolosh, it's a word which occurs in Psalms, expressing extinction, but in order to express yearning for God, a tremendously powerful bonding and yearning for God, to the extent that the person has almost disappeared. So the idea is that the effect of the Hanukkah lamp is that these suspicious figures, these Talmudians who are lurking around the streets with their bits of wood and who somehow represent something negative, they should be transformed. Shegam ha-mordim, that also the rebels, yitbatlu, should be dissolved away as rebels, v'yithafchu, and should be transformed, they should reach the expiry of the soul, which is an expression of tremendous yearning for God. That when a person is davening, they feel such an intense, they're praying, they feel such an intense yearning for God that it's like an expiring of the soul. And that is the effect of the Hanukkah lamp. Until the thirst that they have for God, the yearning they have, is so tremendous. As is known, that the thirst for godliness in a person who has sinned and has now repented, who is actually greater. The thirst and the longing for God is greater than the thirst of the tzaddikim, of the righteous who have never sinned. Ki yitaron ha'or, because there's an extra quality in light, u'min ha'choshech dafka, which comes specifically from darkness. When there's darkness in a place, and then that darkness is transformed into light, that's something incredible. That's an amazing kind of light. And so here we're saying that this really is the second kind of effect of the Hanukkah lamp. One kind of effect is just getting rid of the darkness, or the Talmudians, which represent darkness, sinister, possibly. I mean, Rashi doesn't present it as anything sinister. Rashi just puts it in a very factual way. But if we're translating it into these Kabbalistic terms, with Talmud having the same letters as the word Moredet, rebel, so this rebelliousness, that's something sinister and negative. But the effect can be either making the negativity go away, or, which sounds better, taking that negativity and transform it into something positive.
Kilion?
Right.
Is that the plant that grew for Eov?
That's with the kuf.
Kuf.
Kikayon.
Kikayon.
But an interesting point.
It doesn't sound good Hebrew, Kilayon.
Hmm?
It doesn't sound to me good Hebrew in the meaning that it's applied here. But I have to think about it.
It comes from the word kolot ha-nefesh.
Yeah, but
so what is the abstract noun from kolot ha-nefesh? It's the so kolot ha-nefesh is from a verb kaf lamed lamed, something like that, kalil.
Or Kaf Lamed Hey. I'm not sure.
Too
long time since I studied it.
Or it could be Kaf Lamed Hey. See.
Maybe that's the difference. Kaf Lamed Hey is ending, and Kaf Lamed Lamed. I have to think about it.
17 years. Okay. Sikilayon is an abstract noun which is made from this root. So it's unusual in that it probably occurs more in the Hasidic text as a noun. Okay.
Kilion nefesh. Okay.
Okay. Now, so therefore we're talking about reaching into darkness and either dispersing darkness or transforming it into light, and that is the power of the Hanukkah lamp. Okay, section B. V'hine yadua, now it's known. Shekol mitziyut sheba'olam, that everything that exists in the world, gam b'le'umat zeh, even in the realm of impurity. You see, there is the positive realm, usually depicted as olamot, worlds, svirot, divine manifestations, and then there's something called the le'umat zeh, the opposite realm. Sitra Achra is the Aramaic, the other side. There was an artist called Kubin. He wasn't Jewish, but he had Jewish friends. He wrote a book called Die andere Seite, the other side, which is about a kind of a town, and there's another side to the town, you know, like a kind of a mirror, a negative mirror image. So this, everything that exists in the world, even in the other side, in the opposite side, the opposite realm, which is negative, yesh la hatchala v'shorash b'kedusha, has got a beginning, has got a root in holiness. So that idea that everything has a root in holiness. Okay, let's miss the brackets.
It's a powerful line. Every root has a understanding of holiness.
Everything that exists, even bad things, has a root in holiness. It is a very powerful concept.
It has to be, because if everything's from Hashem,
yeah, right. So everything is from Hashem, everything is from God, and it percolates down into the world, and some things take a very negative manifestation, but if you go to a higher source, it's still spiritual. So there's some kind of spiritual root for everything. Now here comes a very striking few lines over here. Eila sheyesh dvarim, but there are some things she'i efshar sheyumshachu b'mekoram, which it's impossible to draw them from their source al yedei yishtal shalut, through the ordinary process of downchaining. Hishtal shalut is like the word shalshelet. What's shalshelet?
Some note.
Oh, that's shalshelet. That, like, that's right. Like we had in last week, said, but that's with the resh. Shalshelet. And what did you say, Ruth? Shalshelet?
Dynasty, maybe. I'm not sure.
Certainly, it's a word used for dynasty.
Shalshelet.
But it also relates to a chain. That's interesting. That's also shalshelet. But shalshelet means, I usually translate it down chaining. It's like the idea of one svira coming from another, down, like one madrega, one level emerging from another. Ila va'alul, the cause and the effect, like coming down lower and lower. So the image usually is that there's godliness infinite above, Ein Sof, and then comes down step by step by step to lower and lower levels, lower. And that's called hishtalshalut. Seda hishtalshalut. The order of the down chaining of the world. That's how it's often.
When hishtalnut is
to rule.
That's upwards.
Yeah. Alright, all these words are very intriguing. Anyway, there are some things which start on a higher level. Maybe let's try and conceive of this graphically. So there are some things which start off with the infinite up here, let's say. And then they chain downwards, and you get them here in the world at some lower point, and there it is, it's come down through a whole process of coming down, fainter and fainter, or you could draw it as a cone maybe, you know, where the lower level is much weaker and narrower, less than the higher level. But there are some things which can't come down in this way. Not even, it says in the brackets, not even if you imagine this down chaining going to lower and lower and lower levels, right down to the lowest level. Mm-hmm. It won't work for certain things. But there has to be but there has to be gam hefsek. There has to be a gap, or a tzimtzum, or contraction, or a motzach, or a veiling, or a shvira, or breaking. I think that's, you know, here are different ways in which there is concealment. And so hefsek is a gap, and tzimtzum, contraction, I mean the whole idea of tzimtzum, a veil, or breaking, shvira, breaking. Now breaking is like the breaking of the vessels. So in other words, these are one of the transformations which has to happen to this life in order that it comes to this realm over here, in order that it comes to this level. In other words, I've written it in red, but this is really darkness. This is how you get darkness. Because this system of light coming from the infinite, it's always light. There's light which is coming into the world. Whereas this way, there's a gap, there's concealment, there's a breaking of the vessels, there is some form of darkness. So over here, I think we can justify it. We're right over here, light. It's some kind of light, even though it's like coming down the steps. And this is darkness. Now, it's interesting that the darkness is in red, red felted. Why is the darkness in red felted? Because the darkness has a tremendous spiritual power, if only we could unleash that power. Light is very beautiful. That's lovely. But the Hanukkah lamp is reaching into the darkness and is reaching into a more powerful dimension which is there in the darkness. And that's what is being revealed and is even being transformed so that it expresses itself as light. Alright. I mean, I see this as a very, very interesting and...
What's the purpose of that one? And why don't you just stay in the light? It's safe.
Why doesn't who stay in the light?
Why is the whole idea about going into the darkness and living in the light?
That's a very interesting thing. You see, this is one of the points where mysticism and the modernistic ethos draw together. You know, if you live in a world where there is, let's say we live in a little village, and the village is in a clearing in the forest, and we're able to trap enough food to eat, and there's a stream, and we can catch fish. And outside our village is the big forest. And everyone tells you, don't go into the forest. It's very dangerous there. Who knows what's there in the dark forest? So, one form of life, a kind of, you know, traditionalist society, they just stay living in the clearing. But then you have some kind of revolutionary thinker who, I don't know, he listens to BBC World Service or something. He says, I'm going to go into the forest. I'm going to find out what's in the darkness. Be well. I'm going to find out what's in the darkness. And he goes along into the darkness of the forest. And he discovers whatever it is to discover. You know, like a man explores, we go to the South Pole, the North Pole, shoot rockets into space, you know. Whoever have bathyspheres going underwater, you know, people risking their lives most in order to reveal what there might be in that darkness. Now, in mystical terms, there's a similar process taking place. There is the darkness, and the, of course, it depends what mystical system and what mystical teacher. You could have a path of teaching which just says, you know what, there's darkness, you better keep away from that darkness. So a Kabbalistic teacher might emphasize how dangerous the darkness is, and you've got to keep away from the darkness, and therefore you've got to do this and this, and never do that and that, and in that way you're keeping away from the darkness. But then you have another kind of Kabbalistic teacher who says, you know why the darkness is there? So that you can transform it to light. That's why you were created. The darkness is there in order for you to transform the darkness to light. And so that's why we have to do it. You know, it's like they asked whoever it was, Hillary, you know, why did you climb Everest? And he said, because it was there. So it's that thrust. I mean, this is how God created the world. God created the world in such a way that there's the realm of light and the realm of darkness. The question is, why do we, as they put it in Yiddish, you know, why do we have to krich arayin into the darkness? Why do we have to crawl into the darkness to transform it? That really is the purpose of the Jewish people. You know, and our very complex history comes from that. If the world would have been that, if the story would be a different story, you know, you can get books where you make up your own story, you know. They have like half pages and you select the page that you want, you know, I want. So they meet and they get married and they're happy, you know, everything can work. So we got Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and God tells them not to eat from the tree of knowledge, so they don't. It's a shorter book.
The end. But actually God creates the world from darkness, of course. Alright.
Well, not only from darkness, he introduces darkness in all kinds of situations where we might, for example. Hmm?
Well, no, there's a preconceptual, isn't it?
A preconceptual. Darkness.
Yeah, it's not just darkness at the beginning, there's something.
You mean before existence?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one way of describing it is a mixture of light and darkness, which hasn't been separated out. But then God puts darkness into our own heart. We might, you know, God might have made us just with the will to do good. And again, you know, we wouldn't have eaten from the tree of knowledge. There wouldn't have been a snake. The snake represents the Yetzirah, the evil desire. Everything light, beautiful. But the way that God created the world is that there is darkness, there is a snake, and there's a darkness inside ourselves. So on the one hand, there's light, there's goodness, there's the will to do good, the divine soul. And then there's also a will to do negative things of all kinds, a darkness inside. That darkness is another version of this darkness. That darkness comes from the breaking of the vessels. The whole idea that there's darkness inside us, it's an expression of this veiling, of this concealment, that inside us there is also a quality of darkness. And the Hanukkah lamp is in order to enter this darkness and either drive it away or transform it into something positive. So in that sense, the Hanukkah lamp represents the entire project of creation and what we have to do in creation, given that we're in a situation where there is light and there is darkness. Now obviously, one way of responding to this situation might be just to keep away from the darkness, stay in the light, and never go into the forest. That's one way of dealing with it. It might even be a spiritual pathway. You know, just keep in your comfort zone. Don't try to tackle anything too dangerous. And know your limitations. And keep the spiritual fires burning. That is a path. That's a genuine path. But there are other pathways which seek the darkness in order to transform it. It's like a more dangerous path, but it's trying to transform.
I'm a bit mixed up, because what Michael said suggested that the creation started with darkness, but it's not what we say in the Brachot. We say Yotzer Or Vorei Choshech. So he forms the light and creates the darkness. If he created the darkness, there wasn't darkness before he created it.
Well, it's an interesting thing. The first thing God said was Yehi Or, let there be light. So what was there before the light? So there wasn't light.
Yeah, but it's not darkness as an opposite to light. It's like saying,
you see, Yotzer Or, Ravore Choshech is a very interesting phrase.
What does it say in Bereshit? It says what? In the beginning there was,
Vayhi Choshech al Pnei Tohom. It does say there was darkness on the face of the deep.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Reish bara elokim et hashamayim et haaretz. Va'aretz haya hayta tohu v'vohu.
Is the heaven and the earth? Is the before heaven?
Yeah, at the beginning God created heaven and earth. Va'aretz hayta tohu v'vohu, and the earth was chaotic. V'choshech al pnei tohom, and the darkness was on the face of the deep. Va'yom elokim yihi or, and God said, let there be light. So you got the idea of darkness before and then light. Yeah. But yotze or, yotze, he forms darkness. Yotze comes from the world of yitzira, the world of formation, which is lower down than bore, which is bria, the world of creation. And that's dark. So the formation is light and creation is dark in comparison. So the higher level. So it's like God creating different levels, and the level of creation is dark in relation to the world of formation. So it's, the higher level is always dark to us. It's hidden. It's beyond, so it's hidden. And that which is created looks light. Of course, there's another way of seeing it. It's the other way around. That what is divine is radiant, and the more it's created, the more dark it is. So we're in a realm of darkness where there's creation, all, you know, everything is come into being, but hitavut, existence. All right, but so there we have the idea that there's a realm of darkness. And what we are trying to do is transform the darkness, reveal the illumination which is in this darkness. And now these things which are in darkness now and come through these gap or tzimtzum or veil or breaking of the vessel, they still come from holiness. And ultimately, they do come from holiness. Because they all come from holiness, everything has got the power to be redeemed. Because in its original source, it actually stems from something holy. It may not look holy now. Now, then he mentions, like Paro, right? This is nearly halfway down this paragraph there. Like Paro, Pharaoh, in our Parsha. Now, when this discourse was said, it was actually next week's Parsha, Vayigash. But it applies to our Parsha as well, to our said, but we got Paro. Shebashor shohu inyan achina lebikdusha. Paro, in his root, is something very exalted in holiness. Kiyudua, as is known. Now, note 23 gives a set of references, the first of which is from the Zohar. The Zohar says, Shaparo, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who de it periu vid galyen minekon nahorin. Lifroa means to reveal, sometimes in a shocking way. So, Paro means revealing. What's being revealed? Infinite radiance. V'itgalyin minei, itperiu v'itgalyin minei kol nohorin. The Zohar says, Pharaoh is called Pharaoh because from him are revealed all radiances.
Because of him.
Through him. Like he's on that level of some exalted spiritual level, revealing bright radiance. However, Al Yedei Rebuyish Talshalot, through a great extent of downchaining, coming lower and lower, Ushvira, and breaking. So that's like the, you know, a gap. Bamizah Paramelech Mitzrayim. From that comes Pharaoh, king of Egypt. His source is this exalted spiritual source, but in fact what comes out from it is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, Hatanima Gadola Rovetz Betoch Yalav, who is described in one of the prophets as a great dragon crouching in his river. My river belongs to me and I created myself. Right? That's a famous passage in Yecheskel. Yizekah. Umizeh gufo shenaflu lamata. And from the very idea that he has fallen so low, below, kol kach, so much, muchach sheshoshim ubchilat na'alit biyoteh. Those things which fall down so low, which have become so evil here in this world, that's a proof that their source is very exalted above. D'chol agvoh agvoh, yoter, anything which is higher, yored lamata mata yoter, descends even lower. So the very fact that we have a power of king of Egypt in this world shows that there is a source which is very exalted. And the Zohar puts it in linguistic terms that the word paro means revealing in an unusual use of that three-letter root, pei resh ayin. And that revealing is a revealing of infinite radiance. V'lachein, and therefore, given that this is the world that we're surrounded with, we're surrounded by a world in which there's a tremendous amount of darkness, but in the darkness there's always light. Now we have to know how to deal with the darkness in order to get the light. Sometimes the way we deal with it is by avoiding it. It's dark, and the only way that we can deal with that darkness is by not having anything to do with it. And we shut it out of our mind, we're not going to have anything to do with it. That's the way, in some sense, we can elevate, we can reveal the godliness in the darkness. But there's another way. And the other way is, we're not actually dealing with darkness as such, although we do maybe go into the darkness in a way, is with the menorah, with the Hanukkah menorah. And lighting the Hanukkah menorah at the entrance of the home, or metaphorically in the entrance of the home. And lighting a menorah outside in the street, which is like another dimension, this sort of very Kabbalistic public menorah, the menorah which is in the street, which is in the public thoroughfare, the realm of impurity, and it's there as a menorah. That's a way of tackling with this darkness, and either making the darkness disappear or even transforming the darkness into a positive and holy and spiritual light. So the fact that these negative things have fallen so low shows that they have a very exalted source. V'lachein, and therefore, al yedei shemavarim ha'inyanim, since we sift, we transform those things, shenaflu lamata biyoter, which fell down to such a low position, mitalim heim l'shoshom, those negative things are exalted to their root, shugvo gvo biyoter, which is particularly high, particularly exalted. V'yeterah mizu, and even more than this, since every descent is really in order to rise, therefore the ascent of these different qualities after they've been transformed they actually reach something which had to go low, which fell into this whole dark dimension. When it's redeemed and it goes up higher, it goes higher than it ever would have been before. Now, in those few words, and in this diagram, if we can understand it, you know, here's all the negativity, and we have to tackle with this negativity and transform the darkness to light and connect it with the infinite. Yeah, so that's the role that we have as tikkun, that we're somehow elevating everything which comes from this darkness and connecting it to the infinite through the mitzvah that we are able to keep, which is the mitzvah of the Hanukkah now. Mm-hmm.
You can also do it through chi.
Through?
Chi.
Go on.
So if you with your hands, so you feel the energy. And
And there's you can create energy between the hands. It can be used for healing of other things as well.
All right.
So I can then I can give you this energy if you want. And give it to myself.
You see, there's lots of spiritual energies, and there is the Torah, which is like guiding all these different forces together. Mm-hmm. And the spiritual energy, which especially if it's used for healing, is a good thing and can be a holy thing. But the Torah guidance is how to fit it into the whole structure so that it becomes a holy thing.
I think there's one big piece that's missing is the, maybe other than to heal him, and I don't even think to heal him are properly understood or used in the right way. It's always blah, 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 it's always just said very quickly. And from the times I've seen, there isn't really a proper consistent and detailed and worked system of healing in the Jewish tradition.
It actually says in the Talmud that there was a book of healing, but it was lost.
Really? Yeah. Especially where Jewish people are. That's a big one.
Although it's interesting that many Jews are into healing of one form or another. Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the book?
It's called Sefer Refuah, the Book of Healing, Book of Remedies, Book of Remedies. But the there are many aspects of Torah thought which themselves function as healing, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe was a great healer, among other things. You know, as well as being a teacher, he was also a healer, and people would come to him with medical problems or, you know, psychological, you know, whatever kind of problem, and the Rebbe would help. You know, and so this process, see, why is a person ill? A person is ill means they're falling into this side of the picture. This side of the picture, everything is light and easy and happy. And this side of the picture is where they fall into a darkness of one kind or another. And that's what it is when a person feels ill. But that darkness goes back to a source, and the thing is to be able to reveal that darkness in such a way that it becomes the dark, either the darkness disappears or it's transformed into light. Okay. So there we have the idea of elevating everything negative to a higher source. And so, 1 second. Let's go to section Dalet. So we're missing one out. Now that, it explained in sexual gimel, it explained that that's what it means that we light the Hanukkah lamp when the sun is set. When the sun is set symbolizes the idea of this realm of darkness. And that's what we're doing when we light the Hanukkah lamp, entering this realm of darkness in order to transform it. Now, Dalet. The idea of the setting of the sun, it's talking about the coming into existence of forces of evil, which means a setting, the radiance of holiness going lower and lower and lower in an infinite way. And since anything which is lower comes from a higher source, this means that the lower it goes into completely negative things, as it were, through that there is actually the possibility of revealing a very exalted positive source. Can we go on to page Kufay and Bet, please? Second line on the page. Kufay and Bet. Val Yedei Zeh Dafka, and through this, through the fact of there being darkness, negativity, it speaks here about the Sitra Achra, the realm of the other side, Nishlemet HaKavana is achieved. The purpose, Shnitavei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Liyot Lo Yitbarach Dira B'Tachtonim, that God yearned, God desired to have a dwelling in this lower world, which means that there should be a lower world and godliness should be revealed in it. In order that this goal should be achieved, this divine goal, the existence of bad is created. That's what it says in the Midrash. What did God do before the creation of the world? He built worlds and he destroyed them. And that is talking about the creation of the world of Tohu and its Shvira. This idea of the breaking of the vessels, happens at a certain very exalted level of existence. And that's as if this is a description of God at that earlier stage of existence, where there's the breaking of the vessels. And then that's in order that the human being, which is us, surrounded by sparks of godliness in the world, which comes from the breaking of the vessels, we should be able to lift up those sparks through our connection with God, and through this we will be able to achieve the purpose of existence, that there should be a dwelling for God in the lower world. And so that's what's meant by our relationship with these rebellious people, these figures who are there selling wood. They represent this kind of force, this negative force, and we either relate to them in such a way that they disappear, we spread light from over here, or they are actually transformed, that the negativity is turned into something positive and holy. And then in section Vav, it speaks about the divine delight which happens from this, from the fact that we go into this realm of darkness, this difficult realm, and we transform it into holiness. It causes a tremendous divine delight. And that's what's explored at further points within this, this idea of this divine delight. And I think that that's the basic story of the although there's more paragraphs to come, but that basic story, that what Hanukkah represents is us going into the darkness and somehow transforming that darkness into light, and that is an ongoing process, and it's a chain process which can extend all the way through existence. And through Hanukkah we have a chance to do that, and ultimately every day of the year, in one way or the other, we have a chance to bring, either to bring light into the darkness, or that the darkness should be transformed to light. And that's something that we're able to do all the time. So this teaching empowers us to do that, and that's the special quality of the life of each individual, finding the darkness. Sometimes we have to look for the darkness, finding the darkness, and then transforming. Does that make sense, Elliot?